And welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 23rd. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud, after a long Sunday at work and everything?
Oh, yeah. Well, long Sunday at work, but everything's good, man. How about you?
Good. I made it through the week, and I woke up early this morning, and I've made it through the day, but it's pretty late, so let's get on.
So you hear those yawns you're going to hear are not us.
Definitely not me.
That was a yawn. We got a yawn filter on the machine. It inserts them to make us sound more natural and, you know, accessible to the human race.
Exactly. Instead of the beep button, the producer has a yawn delete button. And he'll be busy tonight. All right. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Dennis Sarfate of the SoftBank Hawks, and we're going to talk about two-way star Shohei Ohtani and Alex Ramirez and his Bay Stars, and answer some listener questions. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Saturday, I got to go out to Cebu Dome, and you'll hear me say on the interview, Cebu Stadium. Mm. And I just goofed it up because, and this is the problem.
Did you ever go to Cebu Stadium?
I don't think I ever went to Cebu Stadium before they put the roof on it. But the problem is they have never changed the station that you get off on the Cebu line to go to Cebu Dome.
Right. You know why? It's because you have the amount of paperwork you have to do to change the name of a railroad station is incredible.
It must be. Because the station still is essentially in English. It would be in front of Cebu Stadium Station. Mm-hmm. Is how it would be translated. Right. So, yeah, it's very confusing. So I get in there, and I used to the overheating in the summer and the overcooling in the winter. Mm-hmm. Sat down with Dennis, and the weather was actually really nice, so I just got confused. I thought I was back at the station.
Because it was too nice.
But we sat down on Saturday, and Dennis has been on the show a number of times, and he's a fan favorite, and he started with the Carp in 2011. He went to the Lions after that, and he has been great for the Hawks since 2014. And I love him because he's really candid. You know, he doesn't really hold back. He tells it like he sees it, pulls no punches, all that stuff.
keep your distance.
All the cliches you can throw in there, but yeah, he works really hard. There's no surprise, or it's no surprise that he's at the top of his profession because he works hard at it. He has a bit of an injury that I'm not going to disclose here because I don't think a lot of people know about it. But we were chatting before the interview, and he's dealing with it. But he's able to perform, and he's at the top of the Pacific League in saves right now. He led the league last year with 41. And I remember last year I complained about Aaron Pareda after I did the interview with him and the Giants, saying that his comments were somehow sanitized by Yomiuri or something like that. Every question, you know, his lips were moving and words were coming out, but there was no substance to it. But Dennis gives us a lot of substance, from Rick Vandenhoek's winning record to Kudo's on-field or field managing tactics. And, you know, he talks about the Hawks and the Central League. So sit back and enjoy it. And you might even want to listen twice to Dennis Sarfate. All right, we're sitting with Dennis Sarfate of the SoftBank Hawks in a noisy Cebu Stadium. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Thanks for joining us. Now, you guys had kind of a slow start. What was going on with the team at the beginning of the season?
You know, I don't know, but we did come out of the gates pretty slow. I think we were just trying to feel out, you know, not having Deho in the lineup, and we're trying to put together who was going to bat where, and you know, who was Gita going to hit 370 again? And you know, when he started
he
out, yeah, you know, he had an off-season surgery or whatever. And when you start out that slow, guys start to panic. But, you know, our guys never did. They know how good they are. Guys started swinging, and next thing you know, we pull off a 19-2-2 run. So
yeah.
I feel like we're back in our groove. We're not going to win every game, so we just got to maintain what we've been doing and go from there.
All right, now we talk about all the time, Jim and I do, about how the Hawks have such a high quality of pitching depth. How does that impact guys when they're not getting in games?
Yeah, you know, we've had a lot of guys where it's been the starter right to me, or the starter and an eighth inning guy right to me. So we've had guys, you know, get 13, 12, 9 days off, and that hurts those guys because then they have to come in a game and get results right away. because you don't know if they're going to get sent down if they have a bad one. But we've had guys, you know, ready to go, and our bullpen's pretty rested besides me and maybe a few other guys, but everyone's been getting days off. That helps too, especially throughout the year as we get to the end of the year.
Now, this team expects to win, I'm sure, every day. You guys go out there with a lot of confidence, but you're, as we talked about just a moment ago, everybody's giving you their best shot. Is it difficult to stay composed and focused on winning every day?
Yeah, you know, this team is as close to a big league team that I've ever been on. Guys are very relaxed. They come to the field every day, and we expect to win. But we know we're not going to win every day, but we expect to win. And, you know, we've gotten some closers late in the game this year, and that just shows you how good we are. But, you know, we're very relaxed. When we lose a game the other night, when I lost that game, we come in, it's like, hey, we'll get them next game. It's like we don't let it bother us for 2, 3, 4 days in a row.
Now, Rick Vandenhurk had that long winning streak to start his career in Japan, and you pitched in some of those games. What's it like when a guy has a streak like that and you guys are trying to protect it?
You know, I didn't even know that the streak was going on. I don't pay attention to that stuff. So when I came into the game the last time he got the 14th win, they asked me the question. That's the last thing in my mind. My mind, get 3 outs, get the save, and if he's the winning pitcher, then I keep the streak alive, then great, but I don't want to know what he's got going on. And even if I don't, if I blow that game, it's not going to end his streak. So there was really no pressure on anyone else but himself. Obviously, it ended at the last game that he pitched against the Fighters, but it was definitely a good run for what he had from last year carried over to this year.
All right, now, bullpen versus starters. I always have this argument with guys. They always talk about, you know, starting pitchers are more valuable, blah, blah, blah. And I always say it doesn't matter how far you carry the ball, it's that the ball gets over the line and you guys win. How do you guys view it as a bullpen?
I think starters are very important, especially here. Well, even in the big leagues, they're very important. But if your starting rotation is eating up innings, going 6, 7 innings a time, then it's putting less pressure on your bullpen. It's saving innings. Obviously, it's not really the case in my point because I have 22 games already and I'm on pace for, I think, 80. But, you know, it just saves you at the end of the year. And that's why guys in the big leagues make the money they do when they're the fifth starter and they throw 200 innings, because they're saving your pen. And for teams, that's well worth it. So the value of starters is definitely high. But you also have to think about your back end of the bullpen, second most important, because if you don't have guys that can carry the ball to the finish line, then you're gonna, all that's gonna be in vain. So you gotta at least have guys that can end the game. And I think the teams that struggle in this league are the teams that are uncertain in that role. And you know, the Buffaloes have struggled with it. You know, Hirano started out kind of slow. Last year lost the role for a little bit. This year lost the role to the foreigner, and he struggled. And then they went back to Hirano, and he's doing well again. So it's teams, and it's why guys that are closers and eighth inning guys are so important to winning teams.
So it sounds like you agreed with me. Everybody's equal.
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Now, Kudo, the skipper, he obviously in his second year here is doing really well in terms of winning. Now, what's the difference between him this year and last year?
None really. I feel like he's pretty even tempered. I feel like he played a long time, so he gets it. As a pitcher, he understands it. I think he expects sometimes more from pitchers, which I, you know, he's a Hall of Fame career, you know. So obviously,
how come you can't do what I do?
Yeah. So, you know, but he's fair, and I think that, you know, at the same time, he's very relaxed. Who couldn't be with this team? I've always said it. My 8-year-old daughter could be the manager in this team and just sit in the dugout and put the same lineup every day, and what starters pitch and what guy goes in the 8th inning and 9th inning and win. This team's unbelievably talented. It's not like he grew it from the farm system and came up. He came into it, and the next manager after him is going to have the same thing, because we have so many guys in the minor leagues that are good that are just waiting for their chance. So it's just an organization from top to bottom that has put together a winning tradition.
All right, well, what's your daughter's name? We're going to get the center.
Kinsley might be the first female manager in Japan if she has me to sign her, because I've been promoting her for years.
Okay, we'll do a little promotion on the show.
I'll get home and she'll, Dad, how come this guy didn't pitch, or how come he played this guy? And I'm like, okay, at least she's following what's going on.
All right. Now, how are the reviews of close plays, in your opinion, how is that impacting the game?
Well, first of all, I don't like review. I don't like it in the big leagues either. I feel like it slows the game down, and it takes away that feeling when the umpire at a home game screwed the team, or, hey, it happens. It was baseball. They've been playing that way for a long time. Now, if you want to review plays at the plate in a crucial situation in the game after the seventh inning or closer, you know, but they always say that, you know, the games are important from the first game of the year to the last. But to me, you're slowing the game down here. If we had instant replay, the game would be 7 hours long, because I think there's so many bad calls that it just wouldn't matter. So I feel like you're gonna open up a can of worms, and you're gonna have to keep changing the rules. And the best rule they made was the not blocking home plate, because now you're seeing more guys slide around tags, where before the other night Imamiya would have been out at home on the sack fly by Honda, because they would have blocked the plate, he wouldn't have had the ball yet, and he would have slid right into him. We've had guys get hurt. Hasegawa, we lost him 2 years ago because of a stupid play like that. And if you're not going to let him crush the catcher, then you got to let them be able to slide in cleanly. So that's the only rule I agree with. And if they're going to challenge that and say if was he in the line or not, then I agree with it. But all the ones at first base or steals, it's just taking way too long.
All right, Interleague is going to start soon, and obviously you started your career in the Central League, but how do you get prepared for playing the Central League?
Hit. I can't wait to hit. If I get in a bat, I tell them I want one at bat, but no.
You're the closer. When are you going to hit?
It's the same league. You know, it's the same league when I was there. I feel like there's a few teams at the top with some decent lineups, but the thing that separates our league from their league, and I said it the whole time, is the depth in each lineup, number one, and number two are the bullpen arms that come out. And our start. I mean, your starting rotations are a little bit deeper here than that league, but our bullpens outnumber their bullpens in every aspect. Guys with velocity, stuff-wise. This league's just harder. And I can say that because I've played in both and I've had success in both, but even...
The numbers say that too.
And the numbers say it too. It's a different beast, this league. And like, you look at this team, if you put the Cebu Lions in the Central League, they win almost every year. You put our team in the Central League, we're going to dominate every year. It's the style of play. It's just totally different. And nothing against the Central League. I think there's very good teams and players, but I just think our league is strong. Just like in the big leagues, the American League, everyone always says the American League's the strongest league.
All right, last question here. The Pacific League, I don't know if it's been surprising for you, but what teams have kind of surprised you with the play that you probably didn't expect?
Man, early on I would have said the Eagles, but then they've gotten right back to where they usually are.
I'll talk about bullpen.
I'd say the Marines the most, probably. I didn't expect them to score as much as they were. I mean, they were putting together some pretty good at-bats. But, you know, I feel like the Fighters have a good lineup. I'm surprised at how bad Cebu is. Like, I don't think they should be where they are in the rankings. I don't know. I think last time I heard they were last or even in fourth or fifth. I think they should be at least top three every year with their lineup. They've had the injury bug hit them. But I would say surprising how bad they're doing, Cebu. Surprising how good they're doing, Chiba.
Okay. Well, no surprise that you're always doing well. Stay healthy.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis G, for gracious Surfate.
Yeah, he is very gracious with his time. Like I said, we spoke a little bit before we did the interview, but I just love this guy. I liked how he's so free. I mean, he doesn't care about what people might think. I don't know, maybe he thinks nobody's listening to our show. And
there's always that possibility. Is there anybody out there?
But he's so free with everything. So, I mean, everything, I think every statement he made was worth, you know, 5 minutes of discussion. But what stood out for you?
Well, I guess obviously the first one, because of the topic that has occupied so much of my time recently, is figuring out the collision rules and regulations in Japan. And so he's the first player. Okay, basically I've had two players tell me they really like the collision rule. Or they like, and I'll actually predate that. He's the first one to tell me he liked the collision rule since they instituted it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had Ryoji Aikawa and Matt Merton both said they wanted to see it.
Right, yeah.
Because they didn't want to see,
they both got hurt.
Yeah, well, no. They both got hurt and on those plays. And Matt's point was, I don't want to hurt somebody because the rules require me to do it for my team.
Mm-hmm.
And Aikawa's was, well, why are we sitting here being punching bags?
Right.
So, but And Dennis had an interesting take, which was, well, if you're not going to let them collide, let them slide. And which, of course, is to me the natural humanist approach to it. But anyway, so it was nice to hear. It was interesting, I should say, nice. I'm not taking sides.
No, I'm not either.
My opinion is my opinion, but I don't hold it against anybody who has a different, which is, I would say, 90% of the players I've talked to are not in favor of the collision rule or any of the other sort of non-violence rules in MLB and NPB. So that was kind of interesting. And I was thinking also when he mentioned about the umpires and the replay.
Uh-huh.
You know, it brought me back to, I want to put him and umpire technical committee member Takeshi Hirabayashi in the same room and have them talk about umpires. Because I wonder if they could communicate. Be like, umpires never make mistakes.
I think Dennis would speak a language that
well, no, it'd be like,
no doubt.
Well, in generally, we don't make mistakes. We
knuckle
make very
sandwiches.
Few mistakes. We make mistakes. We're human. Ball players are human. We make mistakes. And he says, yeah, well, you guys are really human. Basically, we're all in favor of shorter games. I'm good. You know, let's not do something that's going to make the games take more time.
Agreed.
And do the umpires make mistakes? Absolutely. I mean, you know, before I think people in MLB were shocked to find how many calls were overturned on video, and even when they're not overturning some that should be
or could be
for some reason. I mean, there's conspiracy theories out there, but yeah, if they had a video replay on every Japanese baseball decision, the games could easily take 5 hours, I think, or he said seven. So 7 hours? Yeah, I think that's a fairly conservative estimate. I think Dennis is being fairly generous. We can call him Gigi Sarfati, generous and gracious.
Yeah. I mean, I like that comment too. I thought about the seven-hour games, and we've come close, I think, in the past couple of years where there were a couple six-hour games, and that was just because they were extra innings and all that stuff. But yeah, you throw in some, you know, if there's no challenge system and there's just a bunch of replays going on, yeah, that could last forever. And there was one today in their game in which it was overturned in their favor for the Hawks, and correctly so. But, yeah, I mean, like I said, I love Dennis. I guess the thing that stood out for me was that he was just so frank about everything. Not one particular comment was more standout than the other for me in terms of his frankness. But I can't believe he said he didn't know about Vandenberg's streak. It boggles my mind.
Well, I think that's a language thing, or Vandenberg, you know, none of the, yeah, I guess it is. It is interesting.
Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off. I thought about what you said last week that the position players were in the dugout talking about how they wanted to rally.
Well,
but of course, he would be out in the bullpen with the other pitchers, and if they're not talking about it, then it's not a point of conversation.
Maybe it wasn't a reliever thing. You know, they're not belonging to the same club.
And the pitchers are the pitchers, and well, you know, he did make a joke about because I was going there hoping to meet Vandenberg and say hello to him for the first time, and they said no, he's not there, you know, he doesn't have to be here this day, he doesn't have to travel. And so when I talked to Dennis about that, he said, yeah, the starters, what a life.
Indeed. Well, let me tell you, Mr. Sarfati had his chance. The Giants wanted him, and we're talking about using him as a starter a couple of years ago. And he went, nah, I'll stick in the bullpen.
Yeah.
I don't want, you know, fewer travel days, more days in the clubhouse and not on the bench, or, you know, lots of more sleep and rest. I don't need that stuff.
Yeah, all that stuff. So, yeah. And then the other comment that darted out or just, you know, pierced my ears, and of course he didn't.
I want to see those.
And of course he didn't pull any punches with this one, was that him saying, and this is after we had the discussion about it, and after you brought up comments that I made years ago or whenever it was ago about
last year.
Maybe it was last year. Maybe it was in the middle. I think it was a question. It was in response to a question that someone asked about what grades we would give out. But anyway.
Right.
His daughter, his 8-year-old daughter.
I'm sorry about that. I haven't heard you change your position, so I just sort of assumed it hadn't changed. And then when you added something in there that was not saying the same thing, but sort of in that same grain.
Yes. Yes.
I jumped on it and went like, oh man, haven't we had enough of this?
Well, yeah, you thought it was a 99 mile an hour fastball, and in reality, it was an 88 mile an hour changeup. But anyway, you took your best swing.
That was far from my best swing, Buster.
But I love how he says my 8-year-old daughter Kinsley could essentially put the order together and make the pitching changes. And it was funny after you lambasted me last week and talked about the fact that I guess even Patrick was passing over the fact that the lineup and all this other stuff could be better done.
Which I agreed with.
I heard that and I got that too. But I just thought it was funny because honestly, I don't think that's the case, but he's a player and he feels that way. And with good reason because of all the talent. And he talked about all the fact that some of these relievers aren't pitching from between 9 and 13 days. And that's outrageous.
Yeah. I think that needs to be addressed, obviously, at some point.
Yeah. And what was worse was that he said, they might get their chance, and if they have a bad outing, they might get sent down. That is really a tough way to go. You wait that 9
SoftBank
days.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. SoftBank is eat or be eaten, man.
Man, oh man, that is a tough life. So I mean, everything stood out for me in this chat. I mean, he's awesome. I wish we could have him. I have always said this. He and Standy, Jason Sanders, I'd like to have him on every week.
Of course, they said something that they said merged there in talking about the confidence of the team. You know, when I asked Jason Standridge, you know, compare the three teams you've been on, and it was the Hawks. Well, we know we're good. We are good. We know we're good. You know, so, and that was Dennis's take on that thing too. I wanted to just, I guess, throw a comment. He said something interesting to me and about his feeling about the relievers being the key thing, the key difference.
You know, once I listened to it after the interview, I think he said they're both
right.
They're both. I mean, he said he really thinks that the starters are probably carrying a bigger load.
Oh well, no. What I meant about was Interleague, Central League, Pacific League.
Oh, okay. Yes.
I listened to that as well. I saw you trying to, you know, well, I know the circumstances. So, you know, you're the one did the hard work. I can't say anything about that, but the comment about the relievers was interesting. And I thought, well, is there some way I could find that out? And I know the Pacific League has really dominated the Central League really since even before Interleague started, but we can measure it better with Interleague.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so I asked, you know, I just sort of looked up, well, how have the relievers varied from the two leagues in Interleague play? So I looked from 2006 when I have that data, which is not the start, but it's the best I can do.
Right.
And they're really close.
Started in 2005.
They're really close. From 2006,
mm-hmm.
They're really close. There's no obvious advantage to the Pacific League. Strikeout to walk ratio is similar but worse than the Central League's. Home runs per nine innings the same. Strikeouts per nine innings is not nearly as good as the CL's. This is from 2006 to 2015. But here's the thing. That's changed. Since 2014, at least, it could be farther back. I picked 2014 as an arbitrary cutoff point. That's shifted. Now you name it, the PL relievers as a group are at least a little bit better in everything. They walk fewer batters. They strike out more batters. They give up fewer home runs. They have a ERA a half a run better. You name it, they're doing it. So I would have to say that he's on to that. Now, the other comment I would make about the pitching depth, and I'll this is an old comment, and it's not really new to the podcast, but I'll mention it in passing, is Shohei Tatayama, whose middle name is not GG, but Tommy John.
Hashtag high heat.
Has had a very good record in interleague when his elbow was all in one piece. And, he said, you know, I said, you know, what's the secret? Still thinking in that mindset that the two leagues are essentially balanced, because that's, you know, we assume they're coming from the same talent pool and there and so on. When my thought was that the leagues are balanced. He said, well, the first answer was, well, they're just better, don't you think? They beat us up. So, and I said, why? And he says, I think the big ballparks help them to develop better pitchers because they're allowed to make more, they can make more mistakes. They can learn. There's no pinch hitters, automatic pinch hitters that take them out of the games. So they have more opportunities to a few more opportunities to pitch, and they have to face harder lineups. So I think they, you know, it makes a, makes for better pitchers.
Okay. All right. All right. So the Hawks again, obviously in first place. And yes, I am starting to look a little bit at the standings and take it seriously now. Although I still think a lot of teams that maybe even like, for example, in the Central League, the Bay Stars still have a chance to get into playoff position. Nobody's out of it. I don't even really think the Oryx, Buffaloes are out of it. Although they're 6 wins behind Nippon Ham, but I think the Pacific League, like you mentioned a long time ago about the Central League, is starting to be a more stratified league, where you've got this division of good and bad that's really very clear and evident. The Hawks are on this good stretch, like Dennis talked about, where they've won a lot of games, especially in May. I think they're 11-5 in May so far through today's games, and they're scoring. The pitching is the best in the Pacific League. ERA wise, they're behind only DeNA in pitching, team pitching. So they're doing really well. We knew they were going to be good. You go out there. This was the first time I got to see them this year, and they just do stuff differently. They just look different. All the guys, like we had Mr. Torita, one of the trainers on last year, and they just all look like they're very healthy. Nobody looks tired. They just have a little extra get along in their steps. They work when they do infield, when they do batting, when they take batting practice and everything. They just look different from other teams. They're just doing something different over there. It's just a step above
I think they do practice a little faster.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to compare pregame practices because I'm usually not paying attention unless I'm watching a guy take BP or something. I rarely pay attention to what guys are doing in the field, as opposed to when I'm at a day off practice, in a between game practice, like the Japan series or in spring training, when the focus is on the practice and how teams are practicing, which can be really varied. I find pregame practice to be pretty dull and very similar.
Yeah. I do, yeah, too.
But the between game stuff can be radically different. And watching the Hawks practice, you think this team is absolutely different.
Yeah,
they're crazy. First of all, you have to wonder if the drug enforcement regime is underway, because Matsuda's just barking like a dog. I'm going, man, this guy's on something. He's high on life, baby.
Yeah, he's enjoying it. So, obviously, you know, when a guy like Rick Vandenhoeck, and I want to talk about his streak because that came to an end on Tuesday, but when a guy like that gets a bunch of wins, it's no accident. You know,
no.
You can see that if he were on a different team, it might have been maybe fewer wins because those are fickle and the team has to score runs behind them and blah, blah, blah. But he wouldn't have won as many games, but...
Right.
But perhaps he would have lost the streak a lot earlier. And he did lose the streak on Tuesday night against the Fighters, 7-2 decision. And the last year's PL Rookie of the Year, Kohei Arihara of the Fighters, just pitched really well.
Yeah, as he has been really all spring.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. But the fighters got to Rick pretty good. He pitched five innings. He allowed six hits, two homers.
Yeah.
He walked a couple, had a wild pitch, a hit batter. He just like filled had a line in every stat box there, every statistical category.
Yeah, he was making mistakes and they were getting good at bats, which is a good combination if you're the batting team.
Yeah, seven runs, they were all earned, and he ends up suffering his first loss. But apparently the fighters said they discovered something when they faced him, I think it was May 3rd, but it was earlier in May.
When they
got the four-run lead on him and couldn't hold it, and they ended up losing that game in extra innings, but they came back this time and they got the runs, and then they...
Oh, so they got him now, so...
Well, something to look toward.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
If they end up facing each other in the postseason, that would be really fun, so... Mm. But still, he had a dominating streak, and it was good. It was really fun to watch. And again, I still can't believe a man on his own team had no idea about it. But they always say closers are different breeds, so I guess Dennis is one of those.
It's in your DNA, Dennis. No, it's not. It's not your fault. The communication sometimes with the foreigners is really weird.
Yeah, I suppose the communication.
I mean, it's just fickle. I mean, it's just like. The people don't know. I mean, not everybody is like Johnny Gomes, surprised that they speak Japanese in Japan.
Like everybody, like they don't. Yeah, it is interesting, but also I think it might be something of a wanna know situation too. Whereas if you're seeking out that information, you can find it. But if you don't understand the language and nobody tells you, then you just don't know.
Right.
So yeah. All right, making a four-seam transition, I want to talk about Shohei Ohtani of the Fighters, and I'm calling him Batman this year.
Okay, well done.
Because he's been robbing on the mound.
Have they been robbing him?
No, he's been robbing.
He's been robbing himself.
Holy moly, Batman, whatever.
Wow. You're not. I'd say you're dating yourself, but... But I think not. I think you're working from image. That was not spoken like a person who couldn't wait, Wednesday night for Batman to come on.
Okay. All right. Well, I was going to say, and you brought this topic up and I thought, okay, well, I'll look it up and see what's going on. Mm. And I thought, okay, immediately you were going to talk about Shohei the pitcher, or I'm sorry, Shohei the batter.
Yeah. But, well,
so I wanted to look at him as a pitcher because I think, we are all saying, well, it's a disappointment because at the time I went to look this up, he was 1-3. So that being said, his whip, his career whip is 1.124.
Before the season or?
Before this season. Before the season. So, and it's 1.24 this year, and last year it was 0.91. So it's a little bit above, obviously, what he was doing last year. His batting average when balls are put in play against him is up to 326, but his career rate is 284, so it's not that terribly different.
And that's a very, what can I say, context dependent?
Right. So. All right, so his ERA is at 3.34, and that's before the game that he threw today. And his career ERA is 2.80, so it's up slightly. And his Ks per nine up slightly over his career rate. His walks per nine up a little. But he's not all that different. It's just that he hadn't been winning any games. He had 16 quality starts.
Well, you've been watching him pitch, though.
I've been watching.
Yes, I've been watching him fairly closely, and I've seen, a little different.
Yeah, I'm not saying that he's the same. I'm saying it's just not as bad. I mean, like I said, I expected to see some really disappointing numbers. Like he's not striking out a lot of guys.
Oh,
walking a bunch of guys and he's giving up a bunch of hits. And that really wasn't the case. Just his numbers are up a little bit slightly over his career numbers, but nothing terribly eye-popping.
Okay.
He had 16 quality starts last year. I think with today's start, he has six. So that's, I don't know, he's right on pace. And he's just not getting wins. And so, we had some comments from some of the people on the homepage when I put the question out there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see where they are. Pete Duffy said, he's hitting better than he's pitching, throwing hard, but getting hit hard. So that's really not the case. He's not really getting hit all that hard. Robert Shadlow said the Fighters have to make a decision, pitcher or position player.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kyle Wu says he will always be a pitcher first, especially if he plans on coming stateside.
Well, what do always you say, is sir? A long time.
What do you say, sir?
Well, I'll say what the comment I replied to one of the posts was, what's the evidence that he can't do both?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, it goes as common wisdom or conventional wisdom. He shouldn't be able to do both. I think that's sort of like the, you know, it defy, what he does defies logic or expectations. So is it possible? Absolutely possible. How, you know, is it the best thing? Who knows? I certainly don't know.
Exactly.
And are the fighters going to make a decision? Well, the fighters essentially, now I don't know the details of the agreement, but they did let him, you know, they did give him the option. They did give him the chance to prove that he could do both. And so far I think he's really proved he can do really do both.
I have no doubts. I mean, obviously he added some weight, and I talked about it earlier, I think before in the preseason, that he added some muscle in the offseason, because his theory was he wanted to be able to throw just as hard with less effort so that he could go deeper in the games. And I suspect there was something to do with those cramps that we haven't heard about this year, which is really good.
Mm.
But I think one of the residual effects has been he's hit with some awesome power to center and left center. And
well, he had that
the strength at the bat with the bat.
Well, he has. He had that before. Most of his power was.
Oh, he did. Yeah, but I think it's he's brought it a level up.
Here. He has. I don't think it's changed. It hasn't changed direction. He was always a center left center hitter anyway. As more so than a pull guy, but yes, has he hit them farther? Yes. I mean, he hit them farther. He's hitting them. He's making better contact. He's making more consistent, solid contact. He's had better pitch selection, which has been huge for him. I think in his mind, you know, this is the show it, you know, this is, I'm proving these guys, you know, take that, Harimoto. Bam. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is, he recently, this past week, he had the string snap, but he had hit 5 home runs in as many games.
Mm.
And on Pro Yaku News, they showed a list of guys who had done that. And I mean, a lot of the guys, most of the guys, seemed like they were Hall of Famers.
Yep.
With the bat only.
Yeah.
So yeah. There's some food for thought. I mean, you know, what he's doing with the bat is just as good as some guys who are in the Hall of Fame. Just, you know, before you guys make a decision on whether he can not do one or the other, think about those words for a moment. As good as guys who are in the Hall of Fame who only did one thing.
I'm astounded. That's amazing. Okay, I heard that argument somewhere before. Okay, I do. I'll tell you, my analysis of his pitching has been, you know, I've watched it, I've seen, you know, and I think he has had trouble, you know, with the split. And today I saw very few. He had a good game. He had a good game in that he had good results.
Mm-hmm.
But he was missing, he was hanging a lot of sliders that the Eagles were not doing much with. He hung a splitter that with a little better swing would have been a home run. But basically what he did then is go with his curveball, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't think it's as good as I do. So I guess he's more of an authority on that. But his slider was, he was missing up a high all the time. His fastball command came around. The splitter never command. He had a couple of good ones. He had a very good one in an at-bat to Zealous Wheeler. He went splitter, slider, and then yeah, fastball. See you later, baby.
Yeah, get you looking for something else. Yeah.
So it was a wonderful sequence. And the thing about him is, you know, I've always been an advocate of his batting, but I'll tell you, when you watch him pitch, and especially now you watch him pitch and you see that upside, you think, wow, you know, why not do both?
Yeah. You know how I feel.
How you feel, John.
If he can do it, let him do it. Get out of the way. You know,
absolutely.
Don't put up a wall.
Well, I think a lot of people have changed their minds, and good for him. You know, people telling, oh, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this.
or you need to do this.
Yeah. In order to be as successful as, I mean, I think it was Lastings Millage who was sort of insulted.
Well, there were some other people who were saying early on that he was an easy out, they thought. So, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, those were five balls that were, well, okay. I'm not going to say there was five balls that were easily out of the park because one of them was a Tokyo Dome one, but it wouldn't have gone out anywhere except Tokyo Dome. But,
well, Tokyo and Jingu and maybe Yokohama, but hey.
Well, that one, no, that was definitely Tokyo Dome's.
Okay.
Straight away left. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Making a seamless transition, I want to talk about the Yokohama Bay Stars and Rami Ball. Alex Ramirez, the manager, you again brought up this topic, and I thank you. You said you put working, question mark. Is it working? Is Alex Ramirez's Rami Ball starting to work? So I wanted to say, no, it has nothing to do with Rami Ball. It has a lot to do with Takayuki Kajitani's return to the lineup, because as soon as he came back, they started to win. But it's all about the pitching, baby. And, you know,
which hasn't changed from day one.
Well, they weren't leading Japan in ERA, team ERA, from day one.
No, but, not quite, but they've been
pretty
parts.
Good all season, yeah. But they've gotten better too.
Okay, I'll tell you, you're right on.
Yeah. They've gotten better. The starting pitchers have let in fewer runs. The defense has gotten better, and they've scored enough runs to win games. And then sometimes, like the Sunday game here tonight, they just blew up and scored a bunch of runs. But Kenta Ishida, the second year lefty, he's won three or four in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Shoichi Ino has been pitching well. I think he's lost a couple games because they left him in there. They left him out there to die. But the other part is the bullpen. I think they found three guys, or at least two guys, two for sure. Tomoya Mikami has just
found their eighth inning guy.
Yeah, he's been a steady setup guy in the eighth inning. And our guy Yamasaki has settled down, and he's closing games out. It's the biggest deal for me is the guys are getting good, the starters are getting good outings. And they're getting it to the eighth inning, and the eighth and ninth inning guys are closing things down, and that's really what's been really good for the Bay Stars, other than getting some offense finally, especially from J-Lo. Jose Lopez started hitting this week, so that made a real big difference. But boom, the starting pitching is just awesome. And Shota Imanaga, geez, that guy.
Yeah.
He's going to be good for years.
Yeah, we were going, I mean, the poor guy. I mean, every time he pitched, it was like, you know, no runs needed here. Runs needs not stop in this game.
Yeah, he was the wimpy. He was the wimpy of Nippon Professional Baseball. I will gladly pay you Tuesday for some runs today.
I know. Yeah, he would be.
You're not getting any.
Right. Yeah, I'll work for runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and now that he's getting them, he's winning three straight. Everything is really clicking, and as I said, essentially, you know, the components of the pitching really haven't altered too much, except probably with...
Not too much.
No, they've been pretty solid. As I mentioned, they weren't walking people before, but their strikeout to walk ratio has improved. The big difference really has been the offense, and I will agree with you to an extent that Kajitani coming back and then Yoshitomo Tsutsugo joining him in the lineup.
Right, he came back off injury, right.
But the whole team actually has hit better the past few weeks, and it's not just Kajitani, but I think part of it, and I'm going to give some, I don't know if credit to Rami, but I think the team has had a little difficulty absorbing his message, and there are people probably who were not easy sells on his message, and I really need to sit down with him and discuss this in some detail before I criticize it, or evaluate it. I've heard, you know, he wants his hitters to look for the first good hittable pitch and attack it in the zone, and some of the batters were, according to some of the players, you know, they were getting behind in, you know, they were missing, or they were swinging at pitch not off. They were following a strategy or an approach that was not theirs.
Mm-hmm.
and they were, it was not working for everybody. And of course they were, it wasn't working, and there was a lot of, cycle of frustration and poor results going in there, and players were doing things, you know, acting weird in a sense. They were having weird at bats sometimes. And I think that was part of the issue. What I think is that, and again, I don't know whether he was trying to, I doubt he was trying to change Tsutsugo's approach one bit or Kajitani's approach one bit, but as a team, he wanted them to be aware of certain things. And to some degree, there was a word out in the press that, and Michael Westbay pointed this out a few weeks ago, that, you know, that going after the first pitch, and the Bay Stars did in fact have fewer pitches per at bat, the Carp and the Giants and the Bay Stars. So.
Yeah. Well, my thing, I mean, I've been watching, I'm sorry to cut you off again.
Go ahead. No, no.
You know, I was looking at the lineup changes and where he's putting people. And of course I was trying to see what kind of a bats guys are having and what they're attacking. But I just thought there was so much mixing of lineups and trying to get the best matchups. And again, I thought he was using some replacement guys here and there just to, maybe because the matchup was favorable. I'll use this guy because he's left-handed and the right-handed pitcher today has trouble getting out left-handed batters, or this guy hits fastballs really well but has trouble with the slider, and this pitcher isn't a good slider pitcher, so I'll put him in the lineup today. And I didn't think people were getting rhythm. I don't know. I'm glad to hear you say that you're ready to sit down and you have some questions for Alex about those kinds of things. My issue was more about, and of course, again, he didn't have the talent in terms of Kajitani being out, Tsutsugo being injured as well. He had to go to other players and mix and match. And that kind of thing, I thought, was part of the rhythm that guys need. And, you know, I think baseball's players are creatures of habit, and that rhythm thing is very important for them, and that they were missing that. But Kajitani came back to the lineup. Tsutsugo also eventually came back to the lineup, and they've been hitting a little bit better. But these replacement players who he has been putting in, and I think they're leading Japan, you know, MPB in pinch hit rate. Their pinch hit batting average is incredible. So he's hitting on a lot of guys he's bringing off the bench, and some guys are hitting home runs. Otozaki is one of them. So they're having some success in that respect, but I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, the approach and the other things might be something that you want to talk to Alex about.
Well, I do, because I don't, he obviously knows what he's trying to do better than any of the people who are, you know, analyzing it from the outside. So I'm really curious about, you know, the general and the specifics, and, you know, and how he wants to teach this and what his goals and objectives were. But I will say a couple of things that I've noticed from the numbers, or I'll mention the numbers I did notice, which is basically this month their, you know, offense generally has improved.
Yep, they're 11-6 this month.
Well, their pitching has been more or less as effective as it was, more or less. The offense has improved quite a bit. And so that's been a huge thing for them, is that their offense has been a little more consistent. I think the world of Yasutaka Tobashira. This is a guy I'm ready to make him the rookie of the year.
I'm going to give it to his battery mate Imanaga, but okay.
Yeah. Well, I think he's just had a huge, I mean, he's an older guy, came out of corporate league ball, and he's had a huge impact, and I'm just so impressed.
Agreed.
And I know Ramirez is as well, and he was in camp even. He said, this guy knows what he's doing. You know, it's like he's telling us, you know, he's saying, hey, you know, I asked him I was at a Bay Stars game a week and a half ago, and I said, now I watched the pitching sequences change. Your pitcher went to more, I don't remember who the pitcher was, went more to his break. You know, he went to the change up in the second time through the lineup, and the third time he went more to the breaking ball, and by that time they were completely confused. And I said, was that part of the game plan from the start? He says, no, that was the battery, you know, worked that out on their own, and, you know, they did a great job.
Well, yeah, we heard Guillermo Moscoso in the interview talk mm-hmm. about how impressed he was and how he doesn't think the guy he plays like a rookie. So, yeah, we're familiar with that.
Okay, so anyway, yeah, I guess the reason I thought about Ramirez, obviously the first one is that they've strung some wins together. They're no longer in last place as of today.
That's true. And yeah, moved above the Swallows, right?
They did. And they've played a little better. But what I think is, you know, teaching is a hard thing to do. Learning is a hard thing to do, to internalize, especially in a very high speed environment. You know, baseball requires you to make zillions of snap judgments and to be able to do this. So I'm really curious, you know, how much of this is guys learning new things about what they could do that Ramirez and his coaching staff were able to impart, or is it a case of they're just more comfortable? You know, what I like is that he brought in, and I'll cut it off here. I like the idea that he came in and said, "Here is my plan. You know, this is what we want to try to do." And when I watch a guy like Yoshinobu Takahashi, I'm not 100% that, you know, he has a plan. Okay, you guys, you know how to play baseball, go out and play baseball. And there's nothing wrong with that if you have that communication level, and the guys are playing baseball the way you want it played.
Right. Yeah, I did see an article involving Alex as soon as I think the Space Stars fell to about 8 or 9 games under 500 mm-hmm. that said, "Hey, look, he wants to be able to make the final decisions on in-game tactics and all that kind of stuff." And mm-hmm. I saw that article, and then right after that, they started to pick it up a little bit. They're still under 500. It's not like he's gotten them, you know, he got them out of last place, obviously, as you just stated, but they still have a long way to go to actually get to a competitive spot in the Central League. But again, they're only 5 wins behind the first place team. That's not bad. There are 2 wins behind the Giants and the Tigers, and 3 wins behind the Dragons. So they're not bad. But here's the thing is I've been looking at, you know, I'm looking at the standings now and I'm looking at the rotations around, and I honestly think that if the Giants don't get some of their guys back, that if things stay the way they do, I think the Bay Stars do have the best starting staff in the Central League, hands down. You know, it used to be, if Oseta makes an appearance and he gets back, and I think, you know, we've seen the Carp work some magic with some of these young guys mm-hmm. and give some other guys a chance, like Nakamura, I think it was today.
Mm-hmm.
And they're coming up, they're stepping up, but, you know, I don't know if that's a long-term plan for them, but for right now, the Bay Stars, these guys, if they pitch, you know, to league average, I think they're the long-term plan for the Bay Stars. And mm-hmm. if the bullpen does what it has been doing recently, I see them really moving up, I think Wayne Grassick had them winning the Central League this year. I can see that happening if they're going to pitch like this.
Well, when Ishida had a great game the other day against the Giants, of course, the first thing out of the, you know, when they did the television interview after was, "Well, Ishida threw 92 pitches through 7 innings, and didn't you really want to see him throw a shutout?" And Ramirez said, "No, not really. I got guys I wanted to pitch in the 8th and 9th inning, and those, you know, I brought those guys out on the mound because I wanted them to be in the game." You know, I love it. I mean,
yeah,
it's like,
Mac.
Yeah, it's like, no, why would I want to do that? That's what, you know, and I see that attitude, and it's funny because I think about, as you know, I counted the bunts and so on, and the Bay Stars are a little bit towards the norm, but I really see two groups of Central League teams. I see the 4 teams that sort of, you know, the pitchers are our bunters.
Mm-hmm.
And the position players are in the lineup because they know what to do with a bat other
right.
than bunt. And then you have the Giants and the Dragons. For whom orthodoxy is apparently more important than anything else.
Okay. All right, a couple of notes. Seiji Kobayashi, the catcher for the Yomiuri Giants, is having so many problems trying to chase down runners who are right there in front of the home plate for him to tag that the team has issued the Kobayashi rules.
Wow.
because he had another ninja slide. We know Lopez had one on him. I think that game was late April. Mm-hmm. And then Toshihiko Kuramoto danced around Kobayashi the other night and scored a run, and that kind of changed the momentum in that game. I think that was on Tuesday.
Mm.
And so the team issued the rules, and they said, rule number one, stay on home plate.
Well, you can't stay on home plate.
Yeah, I was looking at that, and I think they mean, you know, keep a foot on it, or
you can't even keep your foot on it now.
stay close as close to it as you can within the rules. But yeah, stay on home plate. Well, that's what they said. I mean, you know.
I know what they mean. Yeah, he knows.
Basically, it says, you know, stay on top of home plate in Japanese.
Stay.
And then the second rule is don't waste your time stretching your glove or hand out or moving it around. Just, if you're there on home plate, just wait for the runner. And then the third one was make some fakes when you need to. I don't even know what that means. Anyway, they issued him some rules because he had these two ninja slides on him, and they've been costly because they've lost both those games to the Bay Stars. At least I think they lost to the.
That's interesting. You know, I spoke to Kobayashi just a week ago, and I didn't ask him. Unfortunately, I didn't ask him about the ninja slides or the rules.
Well, a week ago they weren't issued.
Oh, okay. And I asked him because he was the runner who was ruled safe when he was out dead to rights at Koshien Stadium because of the collision rule. And I said, isn't this a problem? Don't you feel bad for Haraguchi in that case? He says, no, because I do a little bit, but you know what? I'm giving away as many runs as anybody else. I don't feel sorry for anybody.
Right. Yeah, so that was a game back in April, so hopefully he'll get that straightened out. Now, Oryx Buffaloes did sign Matt Clark. He's back in Japan, and he used to play with the Dragons, so of course, and he was on the show before, and we're looking forward to having another interview with him. But my first reaction was, what the heck is Oryx doing? Here we go again with more redundancy. Here's a first base playing import player to go with Tony Blanco.
Mm-hmm.
And then Japanese players, Hiroyuki Nakajima, Brett Morel, Takahiro Okada, Eiichi Koyano, who can sometimes play first or does get in there. So what is Oryx doing? What's the point? Again, here's what we have, this team that has a plan, so to speak. And then the only thing that I can see is they don't have a lot of left-handed hitting first base guys. But, I mean, Okada fits into that category. He had a two-home run game the other day. Yep. I don't see him moving out of... You know, and if he's not hot, so it's just crazy. But welcome back, Matt. Yeah. We're glad to have you back. I'm just sorry you have to go to the Buffalo.
Yeah, pretty much. He had, he made his major league debut after he left the Dragons. He had a brief tryout with the Milwaukee Brewers, and he hit a bunch of home runs. I mean, he can. He's really good at hitting fastballs and cheating on them and. You know, getting that bat head through the zone.
Yep.
I don't know how much that's going to translate to Japan, where you don't know the fastballs are coming. But you know,
He had a good season with the Dragons when he was there. But yeah,
we wish you good luck, and perhaps one never knows that you know the clouds will part and the Buffaloes will say, hey, wait, we've been doing this all wrong. We're supposed to be winning games. We're supposed to be putting a team together that knows what it's doing.
Hashtag hi. All right, and with that, we'll start fielding questions. First one is a holdover from Coaster Freak. He says, Jason Standridge is in his ninth season in Japan. If he were to play in 2017... would he reach the Japanese players or player status like Alex Ramirez and Tuffy Rhodes accomplished? Or does his 2008 season not count?
You know, I don't know. They're very complicated. And I did find a list of the foreign players who have achieved essentially free agent status.
Yeah, I found the list as well. Yeah, right. Japanese free agent status.
That's right. included Xiuming Che, a right-handed pitcher who spent most of his career with Cebu Lions, Alex Cabrera, Alex Ramirez, Tuffy Rhodes, Kuo Taiyuan, better known as Kuk Taigen, of the Cebu Lions, a number of players, and basically the shortest stint was Alex Ramirez. It took him 9 seasons. So it depends on roster time. Alex Cabrera essentially was on a roster all that time, but it took him 10. So why, what the difference and what the details are, it's really hard to say. So I can't say about Jason, but he did miss a large part of the 2008 season. That is true.
And he wasn't around in 2009.
That is also true.
So, yeah, that's the answer. That's the best answer we can come up with at this point. I will try to ask, and I was supposed to do that when I went out to Cebu Dome on Saturday, but just didn't have enough time. But I will try to ask that again to someone else. Okay, the next one is from Bill Rich in Osaka, and he says, I attended the Hanshin Tigers versus DeNA BayStars game on May 13th in Yokohama and noticed that starting pitcher for the BayStars, Shoichi Ino, throwing quite hard on the sidelines while the BayStars were batting throughout the game. Is this standard practice in NPB? Now, he has another question, so we'll answer this one right now. Yes, this is standard practice, but I don't know. In terms of throwing as hard as he was, I didn't see him. They don't always show it on TV. And I think it's up to each pitcher how he feels, and they all do it differently, and they do it differently at different times in the game.
Right.
Especially if the innings go a little bit longer and they feel they need to throw. But some of these guys don't even get out there and start tossing until there's two outs in the inning. So it varies from player to player, team to team, what the team needs are, what the pitcher's needs are, how old he is. There are lots of variables.
Yeah, I think arthritis sometimes comes into play. Is it standard practice? Yeah, the guys will warm up on the sidelines, but they have fewer warm-up pitches before the inning starts in NPB. So
right.
The other thing is that on a similar note is the relievers will get up and throw a lot. You know, some of the relievers will throw
In the bullpen.
In the bullpen, 2-3 times a game before they even ask them to warm up and get ready. And I don't know, but I always suspect this is a huge difficulty in, you know, Japanese relievers basically have a fairly short lifespan. You know, usually about 3 years of peak effectiveness at the most, and then pretty soon they're, you know, more useful as doorstops.
Hashtag high heat.
Okay. And Bill continues, I also thought the manager kept him in the game way too long when he was obviously struggling with a pitch count of around 112. Are starting pitchers left in longer in NPB than in MLB? And he says, I love the show and want to thank you for providing an English language outlet and an American perspective on NPB. It makes following the league so much better. So thank you very much, Bill. Listeners should know that Bill was the guy who suggested that we do a power ranking show.
Wow.
And so thus he prompted us to do Power Track. So we want to thank Bill for his suggestion.
Yeah.
And then we also want to thank Patrick for doing the Power Track segment. We appreciate that. For me, I was watching both games because the same thing happened this past Friday with Eno. He was on the mound, and I thought actually he was throwing fairly well. He just didn't have very good luck in an inning, and they ended up losing this game to the Swallows. But yes, pitchers throw more pitches in Japan. The pitch count isn't all that important sometimes. But it just depends. I think it's a lot of times the gut feeling of the manager. In this case, it's Alex Ramirez. So I would say he just goes with what he sees and what he feels. And I trust Alex as a hitter. He knows what to look for in a pitcher who's getting tired.
Yeah, he's seen plenty of tired pitchers in Japan.
Right.
He wore out a few of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, I trust him, and then again, I don't. I think, you know, sometimes teams want to build up the confidence of their pitchers to get into late game situations and get through it, because that's a confidence boost. And sometimes it ends up costing your team, but I think, you know, you need an ace. You need a guy who's going to eat up some innings. We're not going to see a lot of complete games. We're just not going to see it out here, so the deeper you can go, the better. And I think he was looking to save save that bullpen and establish an ace, and I think Eno is the guy they're throwing their money behind at the moment. Although I think by the time if Imanaga is still, you know, he is a rookie, and if he's still throwing the way he is at this point, I think he'll be the ace by September or maybe yeah. August.
Yep. Well, as I said earlier, I think there is a plan there. Do they throw longer in the States? A little. It depends on the pitcher. You know, if it's, I think Hideaki Wakui might have a clause in his contract that allows him to throw lots of pitches in a game without, you know.
Especially, 150 or so if it's September and he's trying to tie the league lead for wins and has to pitch into extra innings. Sure. 150 pitches. That's all right.
Sure. Exactly. So, it varies, but is it a lot more than MLB? No, it's not. And in many ways, the starting pitcher's life is the lap of luxury as Randy Messenger has Randy Messenger would put it. And if you ask Hiroki Kuroda that question, he would, look at you askance. That is sort of the most polite way I can say it.
All right. He asks if pitchers are left in longer in MPB than in MLB in general.
I would say not necessarily right now. I think that there is sort of the consensus is about the same. When you get around 100, when you get close to 100 pitches, your time is running out. Which is, I would say, in maybe in MLB, it might be 90 pitches now, your time's running out. When you hit 100 in Japan, your time's running out.
Yeah, I think in MLB it's much shorter just because the Tommy John fears, and I think here with the extra day of rest that you're only going once a week, it just depends on who you are. If you're a veteran guy and the manager trusts you, I think you get a longer leash. If you're a young guy and you haven't proven yourself, you get a quick hook, you know, sixth inning, seventh inning, one runner out there and you're gone. So I think it depends on who you are, but I would say in general, yeah, you probably do get more of a longer.
But in retrospect, vastly shorter. I mean, when I first was getting deeply immersed in Japanese baseball, 23 years ago, 160, 170 pitches was pretty common. Whereas in the States, they were already saying we need to go to 100 or something. In Japan, when I came, then they said, "Oh no, well we know it's bad for their arms, but you know it's Japan, so we can't do anything about it." Like it was the managers who, you know, somebody was holding a gun to the manager's head. It was dogma. It was that dogma guy holding. You know, nope, he's got to stay out there. Right? It's stupid, but you know, it's your job to keep him out there to defend the faith, baby.
All right. And with that, we will wrap up this show. If you have any questions, send them by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast, or you can also go to our Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See ya.